It's Sunday, October 6, 2013. I'm Scott Simpson. This is Maritime Morning Weekend Edition. 2 hours of live talk radio right here on a Sunday. Could you imagine a high school with the grade 9s in the same class with the grade 12s? Maybe there aren't grade 9s or grade 12s. Maybe there's no grades at all. No exams. Would it be anarchy or the best learning environment ever? We'll talk about the suggestions from the people who are making them in just a moment and ask what you think. Tom Clark is the chief political correspondent for Global News, and his weekly show, The West Block, looks at the Nova Scotia election this week. Listen at 9:30 when we talk to Tom. I'll chat with the president of the local chapter of the High Tech Crime Investigation Association. Are they investigating high-tech crime, or are they using high technology to investigate all crimes? And what's going to happen this month when they all get together? Find out how it affects you. Tax filer's honcho Roger Haino will join me in studio for a look at business at 10, see if he can make the U.S. government shutdown make sense. Newsman at the Coast newspaper, Tim Bousquet, has a take on the Nova Scotia election that we'll have to censor ever so slightly. The headline on his long piece this week is "The Politics of BS." He has figured out some things about who our next premier will be that may or may not surprise you. Sports with Harv Stewart at 10:30, and at 10:45, Oprah's heart doctor. Yep, somehow we've scored cardiologist Annabelle Volgman, who will be the keynote speaker at a life sciences event happening this week in Halifax. All that plus your chance to get in on our NHL hockey holiday contest. We want to send somebody to see a hockey game in Ottawa or Toronto. We'll fly you there, put you up in a decent hotel, and all you have to do to enter the draw is be the 10th caller when we tell you to call. Listen for your chance before the end of the show. We're on till 11, then Nikki Jabor with the Weekend Gardener. Let's get to it. There's lots to talk about. Lose the grades. Lose the exams. Don't worry if all the kids in the class are not the same age. That's what a gathering of international education leaders was recommending in a dramatic new learning roadmap released this week. John Kershaw is an advisor at the Learning 2030 Summit, the co-founder of the 21st Century Learning Associates, Inc., and the former deputy minister for the New Brunswick Department of Education. John, welcome to Maritime Morning.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate being here.
Before we get to the details, who's making these surprising suggestions?
The Equinox Summit was put together by the University of Waterloo and the Perimeter Institute, which is the Center for Theoretical Physics. And essentially, they brought together these world experts and opinion makers to forecast what life would be in 2030 from an education standpoint. What do we need to equip kids with and to prepare them for a very different kind of world than we have today?
So was this a look at how they think things will be headed or how they think things should be headed?
More emphasis on the should, definitely not where most of the world education systems are at the moment, although many of them are starting to move in this direction, no question.
We've had the system we have for a good long time, and I don't think there's a lot of people who say everything's working perfectly, but this is a pretty radical change that's being proposed. What's wrong with grade levels?
Well, in terms of grade levels, I guess you mentioned, first of all, that we've had this system in place for a long time. It actually has its roots back in the industrial era. So when people that were designing the education were looking at mostly factory workers and things like that. So the whole school system was structured on, you know, conformity. People would move to the bells just the same way they would in the factories and things of that nature. And it wasn't about creativity. It was about giving you the facts that you'll need to be able to be a good worker in a factory. So in terms of the grades, they were all structured on ages and things of that nature. Well, in today's world, which is what many refer to as the knowledge and digital age, it's innovation driven. You're looking at new kinds of competencies that will drive the future, which are things like creativity and innovative thinking, critical thinking, and those are things that are not really as easily tested using the current methods. You need to use different ways of teaching in order to draw that out of students, and often it's project-based. So when you're looking at grades, and subject matter versus looking at themes of learning and looking at project-based learning and things of that nature. If you're in grade 9 at a certain age and you're interested in a particular subject area or a particular project, there's nothing wrong with linking that person up with somebody in grade 12. That's the way the world's going to be when they leave school and into the working world. They're going to be working with people of a lot of different ages, and that's what we're supposed to be preparing them for.
Okay. Is this a fundamental re-envisioning then of what school is supposed to be? Because to me, it looks like having the grades system is designed to have students come out at the end of the tunnel knowing certain things. We give them a graduated introduction to a certain set of facts and understandings and processes, and they're supposed to come out at the end having learned a bunch of stuff. Is this something different that you're imagining?
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize that, number one, the previous model of learning has been all about content and learning content. So if a teacher dispenses the content and the student regurgitates it in the form the teacher likes, they get a good grade. Now we're talking about a student being able to really analyze and seek out the information for themselves, analyze it, digest it, and determine what's appropriate, and then be able to come up with some creative solutions, which is quite different than the previous model of learning. And I think the other thing that people have to understand, and to your point, there's a lot of people in Canada particularly, because we score fairly well on international tests and everything, people feel that the system, worked for me, why won't it work for everyone else? Well, there are recent studies out of the Canadian Education Association that shows they surveyed the students themselves, who reported back that in high school, less than 50% of them felt that they were engaged in their own learning. It's they're telling us that the learning style that we're using today in their world and in their current environment isn't working for them.
Why should we listen to students as far as being a judge of whether school's working?
Well, if you look at the fact that you want people to be lifelong learners, you want them to encourage them to learn, you want them to be, they're going to have to be that because their environment is going to be changing on them all the time, whereas people of my vintage could select one career and stay in that career for a long time. Their environment's going to be quite different with it being innovation driven. It's going to be a lot of changes. They may have up to 15 different careers over the course of their working life. So we have to prepare them to be adaptable and things of that nature. So if they're not interested in their own learning, and if they're disengaged, they might be going to school, but they're disengaged because they just don't get why they're learning what they're learning, or they don't see how it's relevant to them, then we're doing them a disservice to have a system that just keeps pumping along and doesn't engage them in their own learning and teach them how to learn.
Well, John, paint the picture for us. What would this future high school system look like? If there's not grades, what do we have?
Okay, well, for the most part, we'll start with the whole business of grades, because that's a lot of interest to a lot of people coming out of this. Again, it's we're talking about a system that is primarily driven by student interest. So in other words, there's a system that sets some broad outcomes for learning, so that would likely be set by government in collaboration with a lot of different stakeholders, a lot of different partners, and that's one big change. Instead of it just being, say, the Ministry of Education that determines what the learning outcomes will be, there'll be a lot more collaboration with society and members of society to determine what the learning outcomes should be, so that we actually get a good evolution of thought over time, as opposed to a very static system. The second thing, when a student goes into high school, they'll be being taught by teachers that know how to identify what the student's interests are, what really drives them, what makes them tick in terms of their own interests and things of that nature. So a lot of the teachers will be operating knowing that there's a set of outcomes they have to obtain over the course of the high school year, they can tailor and will tailor the learning opportunities to the student's interests. So that's when you get into the business of if I'm in grade 9, or if I'm at an age, we won't use grades, if I'm at an age that what really inspires me to learn is astronomy, I want to know all about space, so I want to do really focus some of my time at least on a project relating to what's going on with the space program, things of that nature. And there's a number of other students in the school that are also similarly interested. Well, there's nothing wrong at all about putting those students together and having them work together on the project and then reporting back to their peers. And of course, other groups of students that are pursuing their own interests would also be grouped together. So I think the high school would be much more dynamic in terms of, you know, putting kids together to work on projects that actually inspire them, as opposed to just artificially putting them in grades because they are of a certain age. We're not looking at what they're interested in, what their particularly development is, or any of that. We're just saying if you're 13 years old, you're going to be in grade 8, and if you're 14 years old, you're going to be in grade 9.
I'm curious whether this would fix the situation that we have now of kids graduating not knowing how to spell.
Well, the first thing I'll say is that when you look at the whole literacy part of things, and people talk about the level of literacy, whether it be in Canada or elsewhere, being too low. Often it's not an issue of whether they can spell or not. It's often an issue that they haven't reached the level of literacy that prepares them to be able to adapt in an environment. So when people are reporting on our, say, low literacy levels, they're missing the point about the fact that this simply means that they've not reached a level of literacy that allows them to be trained for new jobs or to work effectively in their jobs and things of that nature. I mean, they can still read to their kids, and I'm talking about the majority here. They can still read to their kids at night, which of course is vital, things of that nature. But when it comes to their own ability to be retrained or to perform at maximum in a particular career, then that's limiting for them to be able to move forward. The other thing about literacy, when we're talking about that, we're talking about a whole new definition of literacy in the sense that in the digital age, it's not just about whether or not you can read a book. It's all about accessing information and analyzing it and filtering it and determining what's appropriate and creating new knowledge out of that information. So there's going to be an international results of an international study released on this coming Tuesday, which will indicate what kind. It's a comparison of adult competencies, and some of them will touch on the things I've just said. So it'll be the first look at how Canada compares internationally to other countries relative to the kinds of competencies and the kind of literacies that we're talking about in the 21st century.
Has the system that you're talking about for the future ever been done somewhere else? And if so, how's it worked?
Elements of the system are in place in many other parts of the world, but I think that's what the message is that we're sending. The good news is we're seeing pockets of excellence everywhere. Like in Canada, you'll see certain schools being innovative in these ways. If you look at Finland, which is one of the they rank at the top of the international assessments all the time, and in fact, they don't put exams into place in the earlier years. The whole evaluation of students and the assessment of students is a lot of the students assess themselves, and it's what they call formative assessment, where there's ongoing assessment all the time, providing feedback to the teachers and to the students. And yet, we count on these high-stakes exams all the time, and we are where we are, and they don't have high-stakes exams, and they outperform us. So there are examples everywhere, but to answer your question about is this happening anywhere? No, that's why we got together. We're saying this is where it needs to go, and although we're seeing these pockets of excellence everywhere, it's not systemic, it's not planned, it's not nobody's starting to talk about it. We had a really good initiative going in New Brunswick a few years ago, taking us down this path. The government changed and everything stopped. Alberta's moving in this direction, Ontario's moving in this direction, and BC is moving in this direction. So it's happening. It's most people like me that are with C21 Canada, Canadians for 21st Century Learning, we're saying it's just not happening fast enough, so how do we breathe life into it to make it happen so that the kids of today can benefit from that?
Interesting suggestions, and we're going to turn it over to the audience and see what they think. John, thanks for talking with me.
Okay, appreciate the time.
All the best to you, sir. That's John Kershaw, advisor at the Learning 2030 Summit. He's the co-founder of 21st Century Learning Associates, and he's the former deputy minister for the New Brunswick Department of Education. So what do you think? Do away with high school grades, group kids by their interests and their abilities, mix age groups if it's appropriate, and do away with exams. Is that the future we need for success in the years to come? I'm not so convinced, but maybe you love it. Maybe you think it's stupid. Give me a call, 405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. Your feedback next on Maritime Morning. Maritime Morning Weekend Edition. Here till noon, I'm Scott Simpson. We're talking about the future of education, a group, the Learning 2030 group has put out a communique containing the summit participants' detailed recommendations on ideas ranging from the use of new technologies in the classroom and methods of increasing student engagement to teacher training and benefits of local school economy. One participant says, "We've tinkered and tweaked for decades and we have the same system. If you want different outcomes, you have to rethink all of the parts of the system and redesign them together." Another says, "Students today have a very negative energy surrounding their high school education. The world needs students who feel impassioned and excited about going to school." So the pitch is, do away with high school grades. No more grade 9, 10, 11, 12, or 13, if in some parts, if they still have those. Instead, group kids by their interests and abilities. So if they're interested in astronomy, get them together to learn astronomy. I don't know if I quite buy it. I always thought that's what astronomy club was for. You know, in school you learn how to do math and how to spell and your history and your English skills and things. If you're interested in astronomy, go to Wikipedia, learn about astronomy, maybe join the astronomy club, get together with some friends and buy a telescope. Should that be what high school is about pursuing your interests? Do we really know what a 14-year-old should be pursuing in school? Like, does a 14-year-old, is a 14-year-old able to say, "I want to learn about rock stars, and I'm going to spend high school learning about rock stars"? I don't know. I always assumed that it was something for adults to tell students what to learn about. I'm curious what you think. 405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. Trina, what do you think?
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good, good.
Awesome. Listen, I'm going to be nostalgic for a second.
Okay.
You remember when we went to school and we took spelling and we had like a list and you had to study it? And you had a test every week.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe there were a couple words that didn't quite come easily to you, so you had to study those words harder.
Yeah, and it helps with organization. And I always found, after I had the test, I remembered more.
There are some people, though, who are just good at taking tests. They're not the best learners, necessarily, but they're really good at test taking.
Well, I sucked at math. I mean,
sure.
Give me an algebra question, right? And I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, but you know what? I was good at math tests. I was able to study for a math test, but the knowledge that stuck with me is very little.
Yeah, see, I should have had you in my... Yeah, no, but I think we do need to have tests and exams, and because studying helps with organization.
Studying proves that you can achieve something.
Proves,
and by if you can measure it, you can manage it. If you give a kid an exam and they do really well at it, you know that they're at least at some level learning the stuff.
Exactly. You have to have a measurement of some kind.
But what how about doing away with grades? Would you be comfortable having somebody who would, you know, technically be in grade 9 now mingling with grade 12s?
I don't think that would be so bad. I mean, it wouldn't be horrible, but I just think that, you know, we need to, based on the individual, right? I think it's a lot of individual. I think we lump things together a lot, and especially with special needs, because I'm totally blind, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the school for the blind, right? So, and then I was thrown into the public school system, right? And, it, of course, it's not as individual there. So I think, like, especially with people who have, like, challenges or disabilities or whatever, you know, we need to have some checks and balances in place for individuality.
Sure.
But I think you know, on the whole, I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, grades. I think grades and exams sort of just tell the student and the teacher where they're at.
Yeah, I can see that. Trina, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Scott. Have a good one.
You too, Trina. Trina calling in. I can appreciate the logic behind if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you've been getting. And we've been, as they say, we've been tweaking the system for years, and I don't see our kids getting all that much brighter over the years. In fact, there are some things that I would look at as core competencies that I would expect high school students to graduate with that I'm not seeing. But, you know, if it takes a complete reinvention of the system to prepare our students for the next century of learning, it's worth looking at redesigning the system. I think there's going to be a lot of pushback from people who've been taught to teach in a certain way. Thanks to everybody who was participating in that. Tom Clark is up next. He is the host of the West Block with Tom Clark on Global News, and part of their focus this week will be the Nova Scotia election. Plus, we'll talk to the president of the local chapter of the High Tech Crime Investigation Association. Are these the people who are like that lady on Criminal Minds who sits in a room full of computers and chases bad guys on computers, or are they something else entirely? I'll find out in the next half hour of Maritime Morning. It's Sunday morning, and that means a few things. One, maybe you get to sleep in. Two, bacon, of course, although we talk about it on Saturdays. You can eat it on Sundays. And third, and most excitingly, is Tom Clark with the West Block. Chief political correspondent for Global News joins us now, as he does every Sunday morning at 9:30 our time. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Scott.
I understand you'll be looking our way this afternoon on the show.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm about to hop on a plane to come down and see you.
Really?
Yeah, I want a first-hand look at what's going on in Nova Scotia. You know, it's fascinating. I think this election, you know, even though the polls would suggest a bit of a runaway, I mean, when you've got a 20-point lead, as McNeil does, it's hard to see any other outcome. And yet, there I was in Alberta, there I was in British Columbia, watching the same sort of pre-election numbers happening and then come up with a totally different result. I'm not so sure that that's going to be the case in Nova Scotia, but this is a pretty dynamic shift. I mean, you know, as everybody's been saying, normally, you know, good heavens, Nova Scotia government's always given a second chance. Apparently, this is not going to happen this time around.
Yeah, it was just a few years ago the Liberals were nobodies.
Yeah. And it shows you, you know, I think what it shows you is the volatility of politics. It ain't what it used to be. I mean, in the old days in Nova Scotia, I mean, if you remember, I mean, going back way into the midst of time, Scott, Robert Lawrence Stanfield, one of the great politicians from Halifax, started his political career in 1949. He didn't become premier until 1963 and then again in 1967. Well, that's a long time to wait and work to get the job, but that's how slowly things changed back in the old days. Now, I suspect, you know, we saw when Daryl Dexter came in, it was the big orange wave hit Nova Scotia. Now, if the polls are anywhere near correct, it looks as if a big red wave is about to hit Nova Scotia. Things are moving a lot faster these days than they used to.
People seem more finicky.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. That they just don't have patience for things to play out, and they get dissatisfied rather quickly. It just feels like, and I'm no political analyst. I'm, you know, this is your turf that I'm stepping on here. It just feels like people think it's the Liberals' turn.
I think so, and yet in the past they would have said it's the Liberals' turn in another 4 years from now, because they'd give the New Democrats, as they have other governments, two terms to really sort of play things out. But you know, with the economy the way it is, not only in Nova Scotia but across the country, uncertainty, the mobility thing. I mean, think of how many Nova Scotians are going out to to work in Alberta. It's a new phenomenon. It's a new phenomenon if you take a historical look at it. That didn't happen 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's happening now, and I think that sort of undermines a lot of sort of the deep roots that people have, which leads to a much more volatile political scene.
Yep. Well, welcome to Halifax then. When you get here, it'll be nice to have you in our area, and I hope you enjoy your stay.
I always do.
Yeah. What else do you have on the show today?
Well, we're going to talk about what's happening down in Washington, and here's why it matters to us. With the U.S. government shut down, America's largest trading partner, us, are feeling the pain. I mean, there are so many Canadian companies, Scott, that do business with the U.S. government that are not doing business right now. And that means that money's not coming in. It means that it's harder for the Canadian companies to figure out how they're going to pay their employees if this goes on for any protected amount of time. So where does the blame start on all of this? Well, we're going to talk to one of the leaders of the Tea Party movement, who everybody is pointing at, saying they're the ones that have created this, but they are the problem. And, you know, in brief terms, it comes down to this. The Republican Party is having an internal civil war between the moderates and the Tea Party activists, and that's really what has caused this shutdown. So we're going to talk to the Tea Party, and we're going to talk to one of the most respected political analysts in the United States, John Harwood, works for the New York Times and for NBC.
That's interesting. Does this to you echo what happened within the Conservative Party here in Canada some time ago?
It does. I mean, it is a little bit classic in the sense that you've got the Tea Party, which is an extreme right-wing part of the party, trying to drag the rest of the party over. The difference is that the Tea Party is incredibly well-funded. They literally have hundreds of millions of dollars at their disposal. And what they're doing, and the reason that they are taking control of the Republican Party, is because they are targeting what they consider to be those wobbly members of the Republicans who are not standing up for firm conservative values, such as shutting down the U.S. government. Apparently, that's a new conservative value. And so they're going into their districts, challenging them on the primaries, basically booting them out and putting their own Tea Party activists in. So Republicans are terrified by the Tea Party activists. They don't want to be targeted because they would probably lose their districts, lose their nomination. And so that's why a lot of them are either remaining silent or falling into line. But the Republican Party is in deep, deep trouble right now, and I think that's part of the dynamic.
And in your middle section, I'm curious about this shopping for votes stuff.
So the same techniques that are used to get you to buy a car or toothpaste or soap or whatever are the very techniques that are now being used to get your vote. Political parties are using the same deep data mining techniques that marketing companies are using. Here's an example. We're going to talk to Susan Delacorte, who's written a book about this called Shopping for Votes. Here's a great example. In a riding in the Toronto area, the NDP discovered through their deep mining process that there were houses in a two-block area that paid slightly higher cell phone bills than anybody else. So they printed up flyers just for that two-block area to say, hey, you know, if you vote NDP, we'll lower your cell phone bills. That's the type of micro-marketing that's going on, and it brings with it a whole host of questions about what's this doing to our politics.
See, I'm just glad it doesn't work the other way. I'm glad marketers don't take things from politics. Otherwise, we'd see, you know, Crest saying, Aquafresh, not worth the risk. Aquafresh made promises of cleaner teeth 5 years ago. Didn't deliver.
Right. Well, then the next thing is they just, you know, shut Aquafresh down. They'd prorogue Aquafresh.
Exactly. Tom, we look forward to seeing your show on Global today. And by all means, come back anytime to the Atlantic region. We'd love to have you around more often.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fascinating couple of days in Nova Scotia.
Good stuff. Have fun. Have a donaire, too.
Thank you. Thanks, Scott.
Have a great day. That's Tom Clark, chief political correspondent for Global News and host of the West Block with Tom Clark. Watch him on Global this afternoon. We'll talk high-tech crime investigation next on Maritime Morning. Big hockey fan, big NHL fan. Later in the show, we'll give you a chance to get in on our NHL Hockey Holiday Contest because we want to send somebody to see a hockey game in Ottawa or Toronto. We'll fly you there, put you up in a decent hotel, and all you have to do to enter the draw is be the 10th caller when we give you the cue to call. Listen for your chance before the end of the show. I got a call Friday night from some guy telling me my computer was at risk. I had a virus in my Windows. We got a call here yesterday. Yeah, they're at it again. I don't think they ever stopped. They're just back calling our area. They tried to get me to do some things to my PC, but strangely, he hung up on me when I asked whether his mother knew he was a criminal. With more devices in use and more of our personal stuff stored digitally, information security is becoming more important than ever. Thankfully, there are smart people working on keeping it safe, and they're willing to teach you how to do the same. Let's talk with the president of the Atlantic chapter of the High Tech Crime Investigation Association, which will hold its annual conference in Moncton later this month. Welcome to Maritime Morning, Christian Hockold.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What is the HTCIA?
Well, it's High Tech Crime Investigation Association, which is just a long way of saying it's a bunch of people that like to get together and think of ways to prevent technological threats.
Is this a professional organization, or is this a bunch of, I don't want to say, I mean amateur in the nicest sense. How about that?
Well, it's anyone that's interested in technology and, you know, has something to contribute. So it's not just a bunch of geeks getting together.
Well, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, no.
I'm all in favor of that. I could probably be found at a meeting of geeks getting together, except that I don't like going to meetings of people.
Oh.
Okay, so you are all interested in high technology. Are you talking about using high technology to fight crimes of all sorts, or using technology to fight technology crime?
Well, basically what it is, we all work in the IT field, whether it's system administration or network security. Or in my own case, I do computer forensics. So we all combat computer crime in one way or another. From a layman's perspective, I guess, anyone that tries to break into your network, that's what we're trying to prevent. And as such, we formed the organization of people get together and train and collaborate and talk.
And do you all, is this some sort of certification that you offer each other? Or is this like a group that sits around and just shares tips with each other?
We don't offer any specific certification.
Okay.
We do get together, yes, and we have monthly sessions where we socialize, and then we also have training sessions. So we bring someone in from the outside who has an expertise in a certain area, and then they educate the group at a session and telling us new threats. So, for example, a few months ago we had Michael Moosden was in, and he came in and talked about Wi-Fi security and ways to secure it, ways to break into it. In order to secure something, you have to know how it can be breached.
So do you invite bad guys in to share their secrets?
Well, we don't necessarily invite bad guys in, but anyone that wants to put on a session and educate. So whether it's good or I wouldn't say bad necessarily. I don't even know any bad guys in that sense.
Yeah, well, the bad guys, the good guys want to know the same things as the bad guys so they can stop them, I guess.
Well, exactly right, yes. The good guys trying to prevent what the bad guys are doing and vice versa.
Sure, if you make locks for a living, you have to know how lock picks work.
Exactly, yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, so I love talking to experts like you because you can teach us, who aren't experts, things to make us smarter and safer. What kinds of things at a home level are people not doing that they should be doing with their computers?
The big thing is education, is taking the time to actually go online and read up on some of the things that you can do. You can make sure that you have an antivirus installed. You can make sure that you have a firewall installed. And you can make sure that, you have your computer setting set so that you don't download things you don't want to download, unwantingly. So, which is why there are many sites out there that if you inadvertently go to it, it'll download something onto your computer. So if you have proper virus, proper antivirus running, you have the proper software running, and you make sure that you keep your operating system up to date with the latest releases, you're taking some of the necessary steps to protect your system from being infected.
Now, there are an awful lot of people, and I'm sure everybody knows somebody like this, or maybe is somebody like this, who have only ever learned enough to get by on their computer. They know how to start their favorite program. They maybe know how to load a web browser. But beyond that, they don't really know. And they rely on a friend or maybe a family member to tell them what they need to do, and every once in a while check up on their computer to make sure it's healthy, or maybe fix it once, you know, it's full of toolbars and weird add-ons.
Yes.
Is it, and those kind of people often find it intimidating to even approach the topic of computer security. Is it that hard to get a basic understanding?
Not really. All it takes is you know, a willingness to do it and some time to go do it. It's, you know, adults and kids are very much the same, in where we now have the knowledge and the ability to run the technology, but a lot of people really, they don't know how to use it properly. So even though you're running it, doesn't mean, you know everything that you need to run it properly. So if you take the time to read up, there are many sites out there that'll help you gain a basic understanding, or even pick up a book, the Four Dummies series. I find they're very great because they put it down into a layman's person's perspective, so even non-technical people can understand some of the jargon that's being used and what the purpose is of ensuring you have a proper antivirus. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to go out there and spend $100 on an antivirus. No, there are free options available as well. Just your PC Magazine is an option to go online to have a look at. You know, they rate free software. So the big thing is to educate yourself and take some of the precautions to exercise what you've learned before you go online and just click on a link that you don't know where it's going to take you. Or, for example, if you know, get an email from, I just got an email the other day from PayPal saying, hey, geez, you made a transaction and it didn't go through. Well, as soon as I put my mouse cursor over the hyperlink, it was taking me to some site that has nothing to do with PayPal, so I didn't even bother clicking on the link, even though I do have a PayPal account.
You allude to an interesting fact that occurs to me fairly often, is that for, I guess, people like, I'm guessing, you and I, who got into personal computers in the early days, back then, in order to use it, you really had to understand how it worked. Nowadays, you can use the computer without really understanding how it works. In some ways, that's great because it lets more people use computers. On the other hand, it can be dangerous because you are not coming equipped with the knowledge of what's going on under the hood, which can lead you to do things that someone who has more knowledge wouldn't do.
That's right. Absolutely, yeah.
Compared to the threats that are out there that are strictly somebody else doing something to you, and the threats that involve people doing things themselves. I guess I'm referring to things that trick you versus somebody, breaking in or picking a lock on your computer.
Right. Well, it's one of the things like you mentioned, the Microsoft thing.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody calling you, hey, this is Microsoft support calling you. Well, how would Microsoft support have your number, and how do they know you're running Windows and you're not running, using a Mac or using Linux? So, out of the blue, Microsoft calls you, geez, you got a problem with your system. Well, I got to say, Microsoft would be an incredible company to do that. So if it sounds too good to be true, it likely is. So you're sitting down and you're giving a complete stranger access to your computer. It's no different than somebody up on the street walking up to you going, I think there's something wrong with your credit card. Can I just see it for a few minutes and make sure that everything works on it? Well, would people give them a complete stranger the credit card? Absolutely not. They wouldn't. But when it comes to a computer going, geez, they may be right. Maybe there's something. It has been running a little slow. So, but that does not mean that somebody from Microsoft is going to call you and then offer you free tech support. Because after all, Microsoft is in it for profit. So
for sure.
Yeah.
Are there many threats anymore that are entirely from the outside? Like, I'm asking in the sense that if I am just using my computer and I am smart about not clicking on things and not going to page, you know, not going to bad neighborhoods on the internet, not opening bad emails, that kind of thing. If I'm doing things right in using the computer, am I still at risk?
Not near as much as you would be if you don't follow those basic steps. I've been with computers or working with computers for 25 years, and I've had literally perhaps two or three viruses in that entire time, just because I've never clicked on the links. I always make sure that, well, okay, is the bank going to send me an email saying, hey, geez, you know, we need to update your PIN information on your client card? Well, common sense should come in first and foremost and say, well, the bank's not going to send me an email asking me to update my PIN. They would call me. And if they were to call me, then I would take the next step and go into the bank and not just give some stranger over the telephone my information. And social engineering, you know, is definitely out there, and that's where the Microsoft support comes into play, where people call you arbitrarily and ask for information, personal information, and then they can create a profile or they can log in and take control of your computer. So If you just take the time to, you know, think about it and then analyze what's come to you, what's landed in your inbox, or that link, you know, hey, click here, you can win $1 million. Yeah, well, chances are you're not going to win $1 million.
No.
Although the people that are saying the email program, they're slowly building theirs. <You
know? laughs> As a forensic computer guy, I guess you analyze computers for actual crimes.
Yes.
You look for evidence of crimes there. What are the criminals usually doing poorly that lets you catch them?
Huh. I don't want to give away the...
Yeah, no, I don't want you to make it easier for criminals to commit crimes, but do you ever go, come on, you're a criminal, you should know better than to do this?
You know, it's no different than the average user. If they take... If anyone just takes care of their system the way they're supposed to, then you're fine. I really can't get into the side of what I look for in forensics, because then I would be giving, you know, information in an anti-forensic sort of a way, and I would be laying roadblocks on my own road, and I really don't want to do that. So, you know, but...
Okay, then what tips could you give a good person to protect their information from prying eyes?
Like we said, the only thing you really need to do is, you know, update your computer system, update the operating system. You know, the Microsoft, for example, there's Windows Update. Go on there, download the updates, you know, just about every other day there's a security update for the Windows system to make sure it doesn't get breached from the outside when you visit some websites. Make sure that your Java is up to date. Make sure that your Flash is up to date. So all those things, you know, that your web browser uses to display information or content from various internet sites, those are the things that you need to update, because those are the things that can trick a browser into giving away its information. The information on a browser is not near as secure as people like to think it is. You know, people use, you know, storing the passwords online or in the browser cache. So it's much easier to just click the login and my username and password are already there than it would be to type in my username and password. But that being said, it's stored on your computer. So if your Flash your Flash isn't up to date, then, for example, if there's a new vulnerability that came out with that, then they can access certain areas of the computer. They may be able to access your passwords. So the possibility exists. So really, it's just taking proper precautions. Update your computer system, run a proper antivirus, and then run a firewall, and then you should be pretty much safe.
Good. And then the rest of it's just on you to not do something dumb.
Pretty much. That's exactly. Yeah, exercising common sense.
You have a free public event coming up. You can learn from the people at the High Tech Crime Investigation Association. Where can people go for this free public event?
Yeah, actually, yes. It is not in Moncton. It is being held in Fredericton. So it's actually at the Delta in Fredericton on the evening of October 21st. It starts at 6:30. You know, kids and adults, welcome. Kids 12 and over, because we do approach topics such as sexting, which is, you know, you're talking about 12 years and up age group for that. We will talk about, you know, just basically on basic online safety. So if parents, if you want to come in and, you know, find out some tips and tricks and hints on how to protect your computer and listen to the people that are experts in their fields, come on down, come on in. It's free. There's beverages there, and we also offer prizes.
Prizes!
Absolutely. Nothing. Who can't use an iTunes card? Come on.
I'd love an iTunes card. I'd love a free USB drive. I'd love a little fuzzy thing that sits on top of my computer and makes me smile every time I look at it.
Don't we all?
Yes. Thanks very much for talking to me, Christian.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Be safe out there.
Yes, thanks very much. Have a nice day.
Take care. That's Christian Hochhold, who's the president of the Atlantic chapter of the High Technology Crime Investigation Association. Look online for HTCIA if you want to, I don't know, maybe you're one of these super smart guys and you can lend some expertise to them. Maybe you're a bad guy who can share your techniques with them. Maybe you're a bad guy with a conscience who wants to teach them your sneaky ways so they can protect other people. A man who knows the ins and outs of tax loopholes is on the other side of the glass right now. Roger Haino standing by from Tax Filers to join us for a chat about business right after this news update from Amanda Debison on Maritime Morning.